would somebody do this on purpose when they could do something else? Drowning out the morning birds with the same three songs over and over. I wish I wrote it, but I didn't, so I learned the words. Hum along till the feeling's gone forever. Took a tour to see the stars, but they weren't out tonight. So I wished hard on a Chinese satellite. I want to believe. Instead, I look at the sky and I feel nothing. You know.
Hello, welcome to NBA in the AM. I am your host, Marcus Frank.
And I'm Gavin Evans.
And pretty exciting start to the NBA season,
yeah,
Gavin.
Real quick, before we start, we do apologize for the late start here. The studio is having some technical difficulties right now we're trying to sort out. So really, really sorry for that late start. But with that, I think we're going to get right into it, right?
Yeah, pretty exciting start to the NBA season, right? I mean, double OT thriller, OKC v. Houston.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were watching that together. It was
an amazing game to kick off the season.
Şengün looked crazy, right?
Yeah, Şengün, Chet looked good, Shai looked good. It's definitely been quite the week in the NBA. There's a lot to talk about.
Gambling, arrests.
Yeah. The FBI, Cash Patel.
Multiple 50 bombs.
Yeah.
Crazy carry jobs going on throughout the league. Luka, Giannis carry job. We're going to talk about the Celtics. And just give some of our way too early hot takes. So, to start off, last Tuesday was the season opening, heralded as one of the best season openings in the past 15 years, actually. On opening night, the average viewers was 5.61 million. Gavin, hear this, most for an opening night in 15 years.
Wow, that's impressive. With the way the TV ratings have been looking recently, that is a very good thing to hear.
87% increase from last year's opening night. Pretty good. What else, Gavin?
Victor Wembanyama. This is, I guess, one of my way too early hot takes of the year, but he is honestly looking like he could be the MVP right now. I think he's the runaway defensive player of the year. Honestly, he could be in contention for most improved player. He's really just in contention for being the GOAT right now, to be honest. He's averaging 13 points and 13 rebounds a game right now with 6 blocks a game. 6 blocks a game is genuinely...
In a non-box score watching way, you watch him out on the floor, it looks like he's playing against, like, little kids, basically.
Yeah, I mean, he's taller
than everybody. AD, who's, like, what, 6'10", 7-footer... He's blocking his shots like he's playing against his 5-year-old kid on the playground. Absolutely ridiculous. And you see the highlights from his first game. He just palms the ball, slaps it down. It's crazy.
Yeah, and it's important to not forget, like, the defense is obviously there. The offense is there as well, right? Like, you talk about Anthony Davis. That's a guy who is one of the greatest all-time defenders in the NBA. Historic defender, right? And he it looks like... You know, he's like a little kid out there, like you said, compared to Wemby. And, you know, you keep seeing these clips of Wemby, right, where, you know, he's having a great defensive game, right? You see he gets 2 blocks in the same defensive possession. And then you're like, wait a second, why is there 15 seconds left in this highlight? And it's because he gets the rebound, he dribbles the ball down the court, and he shoots and nails a logo 3. This level of defense, with the fact that he moves like a guard at 7'4" and can shoot the 3, is just crazy.
It's scary for the league. I was seeing some people online just say it's unfair. They need to make like a Wembanyama rule where...
Yeah, ban
I mean, he's what, like 7'7", and he moves like a guard. It's just not fair for the league. And the Spurs, they've started out 4-0. I think this is, like, the best they've done in the 2020s with their past couple years of just tanking teams. I think we might have underestimated the Spurs in our rankings. They might not just have a playoff berth. They may have a top seed in the West. They have been without De'Aaron Fox for this run, who is probably their third best player. Definitely will be interesting to keep following the Rockets. Another team that has been looking interesting is the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers also played on opening night without LeBron. And as we predicted on the show last week, Luka had an insane carry job. Almost a 40-point triple-double. He's looking way more slim, way faster than he looked last season with all the weight that he lost. In his second game, he had another near 40-point triple-double, and he took the Lakers to a solid start, 1-1. However, after his second game, he injured his finger and leg, apparently, and he's going to be out for a week. So, already seeing the heavy burden that Luka was carrying with the somewhat weak offensively without LeBron Lakers team, and also very weak defensively overall. However, the other day, without Luka, Austin Reeves, he dropped 50.
Yes, Austin Reeves looked really good.
against the Kings.
One of many just kind of out of the blue surprising 50 bombs this week. But, I mean, his numbers are just looking really good. Now, granted, it's a small sample size of four games, but averaging almost 36 points a game, almost 7 rebounds and 8.5 assists with 2 steals.
Austin Reeves, or is that Luka?
That's Austin Reeves. Oh, wow. Right? Those read like a Luka Doncic stat line, right? He's been amazing. And he's shooting, with those numbers, that's 57% from the field and 43% from three. So on pretty efficient numbers, Austin Reeves is really turning into a superstar in front of us, I think.
Yeah, but also you have to look at it. Who's his second best option right now? What, DeAndre Ayton, who's not a good player, really.
That is
a buyout guy.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Who had kind of a bum season last year.
He has a lot of opportunity right now on the Lakers.
He has all of the opportunity. Yeah. I mean, him and Luka basically are the only two.
To be fair, like some of
main
these
offensive
numbers,
engines
they
without
did come
LeBron
with Luka. The first two games they did have Luka, and his points were down, but he still did have, you know, 7 rebounds and 11 assists and 5 rebounds and 9 assists in those two games. So the only thing that's really gone up are his points with Luka gone, which I guess is a factor of the, you know, him being the only one who can really shoot on that team right now. But it's a really good sign for the Lakers that he can step up in Luka and LeBron's absence, I think. And I think that means he'll be all the more impressive as a third option with Luka and LeBron back.
Yeah, I mean, definitely would be interesting to see if he could be a potential guy that could just have a breakout season, like you said, become an all-star caliber guy. He definitely has it in him. I mean, he was an undrafted player. Lakers signed him. It's also a contract year for him. Contract year for him, right, Gavin? So He could definitely be elevating his game for that also.
Yeah, he's definitely in line for a pretty hefty contract.
Another carry job that I was just talking about, the Bucks with Giannis. And that's another team who's really not that deep at all. Their second best player is Miles Turner, who's a solid starting center in the league, but should not be the second best option on a team with championship and top seed aspirations.
Yeah, that team is absolutely a Giannis Antetokounmpo carry job. It's not a team that I see as really a title contender. You know, I guess anything is possible when you have Giannis, but they're just not deep enough to make a deep playoff run, I think. But I mean, Giannis is an MVP caliber player right now.
He's been putting up insane numbers. Yeah, I mean, absolutely
his
crazy.
Numbers are really
he dropped
absurd.
Like 37 against the Wizards. He had, 20 rebounds against the Cavaliers the other night. I was watching that game. It was a pretty close game, but you needed Giannis to have a 40-point triple-double, which is not sustainable. And with this level of load at his age, he's what, in his 30s now? You wouldn't want to see him get injured midway season. If Giannis got injured, at all, the Bucks could just plummet out of
the
playoffs.
He's a flat 30 years old right now, so not crazy age, but you're absolutely right. If he were to miss even a couple of weeks of playing time, the Bucks could go winless in that stretch, genuinely, and that could tank any kind of playoff hopes they have. But his numbers right now are 36 points, 16 rebounds, and 7 assists on 70% field goal shooting, and you know, 66% three-point shooting, but that's because he shot, 5 threes this season.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, is more than he used to shoot. So I will give him that. If he wants to shoot one or two, 3 points a game and make both of them, I think that's a great addition to his offense. But, his three-point shooting, the volume isn't really there. Averaging a 36-point, 16-rebound, double-double is very impressive.
Elite. I mean, definitely one of the top contenders for MVP this season.
Absolutely a top contender.
With more sample size, we'll do a MVP power rankings probably next week because 3 games isn't really enough to say anything, but definitely interesting to keep following Giannis for the rest of the season. Another team I've been watching this week as a New Yorker is the Knicks. The Knicks under their new coach Mike Brown look really solid. They've been without Mitchell Robinson, who was their starting center that they were playing against the Celtics and the Pacers last year in the playoffs. But you can see clearly without Tom Thibodeau, who notoriously overplays his starters, right, Gavin? I think he was voted also as, like, the worst coach players wanted to play last year.
The same five-man lineups, you know, for 40 minutes a game. It was really crazy.
Which, last year in the playoffs against the Pacers, the Knicks saw that that wasn't sustainable. The two best teams who made it to the finals last year, both two teams who could run, like, 11 or 12 men deep, who were maybe relying on one guy in moments, but not throughout the entire game. And with the Knicks only running, like, a solid seven-man rotation throughout most of the season, that really took a heavy load on the starters, especially Brunson, who, in clutch time, they would just only feed him the ball exclusively, which, one, is pretty predictable, and two, definitely wears out a guy if you're trying to make it all the way to June, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But in their season opener against the Cavs, the Knicks won, actually, and they started some guys who barely got any playing time last year. Before the first half was over, they played something like 11 guys, which is pretty big radical change from last season. They started Cat alongside another five, and with Malcolm Brogdon retiring halfway or through the preseason, off the bench they brought Tyler Kolek, who was one of their rookies from last year, as the point guard. Miles McBride is looking like a sixth man of the year caliber player. He dropped something like 17 points. And if the Knicks could see a lot of their role players take a pretty big leap this year, they could definitely be the first seed in the East, right?
Yeah, the Knicks are your area of expertise, so I'll leave them to you, but I think they are definitely contenders right now. I mean, you know, any team with Cat, Jalen Brunson, those type of guys is going to be a good team. If you get to talk about your Knicks, can I get a moment to talk about the Sixers?
Yeah, definitely.
As a Sixers fan, my expectations going into the season were not through the roof, let's say. But VJ Edgecombe has
been... He looks great.
Absolutely stellar. So I guess let's talk a little bit about... We were at the Celtics home opener against the Sixers, both teams' season opener, last Wednesday in TD Garden in Boston.
TD Garden, really nice arena.
Really nice arena. The fans were very gracious there, the Celtics fans.
Yes.
They have a little bit of
a bad
rep.
We love the Celtics fans.
Yeah, I didn't get any of that. Everyone was very polite and nice. And at that game, VJ Edgecombe had 34 points, 7 rebounds, and 3 assists.
He had like the most points in a first quarter for any rookie debut.
Yeah, most points in a first quarter by any rookie ever, beating LeBron's record.
He dropped like 14 points, and it was pretty quick.
Most points in a first quarter of an NBA debut. And he had, I think, the most points in an NBA debut since, like, it was like Wilt Chamberlain in like the 1950s. You know, anytime you're in statistical conversations with Wilt Chamberlain and LeBron James, you know you've got something special.
Yeah.
And beyond, like, just the numbers, right, beyond the box score, the way he looked out on that court, he looked like a seasoned veteran. He looked so comfortable. He didn't shy away from the big moments, right? It was a game that did come down to the final buzzer, you know, with a missed Peyton Pritchard, I believe, buzzer beater that missed.
Yes, yes.
And he just looked so comfortable out there, especially in crunch time when they were down a lot, right? Him and Tyrese Maxey is another guy I want to talk about.
An elite starting backcourt. Maybe one of the best in the East can keep up that level
of
production.
This is one of the best backcourts. I don't even think in the East. I think in the league.
That's a pretty hot take.
I don't think it is. I think you look at Vijay Edgecombe, who is, in my opinion right now, if you know, the season ended today, I think Vijay is rookie of the year.
I mean, yeah.
But
it's been three games, to be fair.
It's been a week, but, you know. And then you add Quentin Grimes in the backcourt, who, granted, at the game we were at, the season opener, he had a very bad game, 10 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. He didn't look good out there.
He did not look like the sixth man of the year. For those who didn't listen last week, Gavin said that he thought Quentin Grimes could be sixth man of the year.
Well, okay, you're hating, but and then in the second game versus the Hornets, he had 24 points, right? And then game after, 14. His points have gone up. His efficiency has gone up. He's definitely developing to a role in this backcourt, I think. His numbers have obviously gone down since last year because he lost that starting role to Vijay. But he's one of the better backup guards someone can have in this league, I think. And then you add the fact that Jared McCain is going to be coming back into this backcourt in a few weeks. The depth is unparalleled. I think Jared McCain is a starting guard on a lot of teams in this league. And the fact that he's going to be like the third or fourth guard, possibly on this team, I think is crazy.
Yeah, that's a fair assertion. But how about Joel Embiid? He looked absolutely terrible. I noticed right from the jump, he didn't even jump in the jump ball.
Yeah, that was
he crazy. Couldn't jump. Only took jump shots.
Yeah,
he barely attacked the rim.
Embiid did not look good against the Celtics. He had 4 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 of 9 from the field. He looked bad. And a lot of that, I hope, is just chalked up to rust. He hasn't played an actual NBA game in quite some time. And you do look against the Hornets in game two. He had 20 points on 7 of 11 shooting, 3 of 6 from 3. He looked a lot better. He was on a minutes restriction, so he only played 20 minutes. So 20 points, 20 minutes isn't awful. That's pretty good.
Against the Hornets? Quote-unquote Hornets?
Against the Hornets, but it's better than nothing. He did not play against the Magic. I assume that's like a load management health issue. But hopefully, the thing is I think this is... this team is built in a way that Embiid has never really had before, where it's a team that has, I think, proven now at 3-0 that they can win without him. Now, granted, the Celtics and the Magic are not having great seasons, but, you know, in previous years, those are games that the Sixers would have lost without him, right? So the fact that this backcourt can kind of carry him through the season like that, if he can keep playing these like 20-minute games like he had versus the Hornets throughout the year, almost treating like the regular season like the preseason, and get back into shape, get back into form, and be healthy and his old MVP caliber self by the playoffs, I think they could be real contenders.
I don't know. With his injury concerns, I feel like his career might be cooked, because, I mean, he hasn't been able to put together a healthy postseason run in years. And even if he's better at all, you have to worry about Paul George also, who's making a substantial amount of money this season. He has yet to hit the floor. If two of your highest paid players have major injury concerns and are getting up there in age, it could be seriously concerning for the Sixers. But after looking at, after seeing VJ's start to the season, it's like he's basically saying, rest easy now, Joel. I have the watch. See you in Valhalla, brother. So that's the Sixers. Should we talk about the Celtics now?
We should. I think we should. So
I predicted that the Celtics would be a play-in playoff sleeper. I'm really starting to regret that after seeing their first two games against the Sixers and the Knicks. Or I watched the first two games.
Yeah. So they are 0-3 right now. But I think there's one thing I want to highlight for any Celtics fan that is out there listening right now. You're not winning a championship this year.
Think it might be over for them.
No, I think it's the opposite of over, honestly. If there's a year you want to be as bad as possible, it is this year. This is a year that is talked about as having one of the better sets of talent coming into the league. There are guys like Cameron Boozer, AJ DeBonsta, and Darren Peterson. And some of these like guys that are going to be in this draft this year are being talked about as, you know, pretty generational prospects. And if there's a year that the Celtics want to be really bad and get in the lottery, it is this year.
They do have their pick unprotected
this
year and for the next couple of years. So
if there is a year where you can land,
it's like not hopeless
for them.
A top
five pick, and then come back next year with whoever you get in the draft lottery plus Jason Tatum coming back healthy, they will be real contenders again. Especially if this offseason, upcoming offseason after this year, they can pick up a center, whether through trade or free agency. The Celtics have a future. It's just not this season. But the future is not all that, you know, dark, I feel like.
That's fair. I mean, they are running a starting lineup with four guards and one center who was basically their third string center last year with Nemias Kida. He actually had a pretty solid opening game, but that was also against the Sixers, who have no backcourt or really a real solid power forward. When you're running five guards in 2025 NBA, where we're seeing a resurgence of like the double big and big power forwards, you can't really do that anymore.
Small ball.
It is a solid five guard lineup with Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Sam Hauser, and Peyton Pritchard. But two of those guys really shouldn't be in your starting lineup. In Peyton Pritchard and Sam Hauser, they're solid 3-point shooters, but they don't really bring too much dynamicness to the starting lineup. So without that real center or defense, I don't think the Celtics have any hope of accomplishing much this season. Maybe you see them get a center in free agency if a guy is bought out, or in the trade market if they go hot at some point, or if Jason Tatum ends up coming back early this year. But I don't think the Celtics will be contending for the first pick.
Yeah, absolutely agree. This year they will not be contending, but, you know, like I said, for the Celtics fans out there, keep your hopes up for the next few years. I think there's a pretty bright future ahead for the Celtics.
Before we continue, we're going to have a quick public service announcement.
Yep, so a quick texting while driving prevention PSA for you guys. This message is for all of you sitting in the passenger seat. And apologies if things get a little uncomfortable, but how does it feel to be at the mercy of someone who thinks a random text is worth more than your life? Why not just ask them to stop texting? It may be a little awkward, but believe me, you'll live. A message brought to you by the Ad Council, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. Learn more at stoptextstoprex.org.
Thank you for that, Gavin.
All right. Real quick, we brought up Wembanyama and the Spurs earlier. I want to go back to the Spurs as a team beyond Wembanyama. We brought up VJ Edgecombe as a Rookie of the Year candidate. Obviously, Cooper Flagg is a Rookie of the Year candidate. Dylan Harper in San Antonio has been very solid for them. He's averaging 15 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists on 48% shooting from the field goal, or field goal shooting. He's been good. And this is a team that is missing De'Aaron Fox right now. So they're missing a veteran, guy in their backcourt. They obviously have reigning Rookie of the Year, Steph Castle. Another Rookie of the Year candidate, Dylan Harper. This is a serious contender of a team. And now that they finally have a backup big in Luke Kornet, who can give the Spurs solid minutes from the backcourt when Wembanyama is not on the court, I really just, like, this team doesn't have a lot of weaknesses, I feel like. Also, real quick, can we talk about the nickname for Wemby and Luke Kornet, the French Vanilla? I really like that one. It's one of my favorite.
Yeah, that is a solid duo nickname.
Yeah, I mean, we said this earlier, but also the Spurs could have a, like, Rockets breakout season like last year, where maybe they're, like, the second or third seed unexpectedly. Everyone definitely thought that they would contend for maybe a sixth seed or a play-in spot, but, like, the sixth or seventh seed.
Seventh seed.
They could really shock the NBA. I think, though, there are injury concerns with Wemby. Being, like, a 7'7" guy who's very skinny and is doing a lot of crazy moves, he could definitely get injured. Last season, his season was cut short because of an injury.
Yeah, a little bit of a freak injury with a blood clot, a possible
defensive player of the year. But hopefully he'll put together a healthy season. Hopefully all of his supporting pieces will also have solid seasons, yeah, and well, they can contend.
One thing I think is also important to keep in mind for the future of this team, you know, we were just talking about the Celtics' future in the draft next year and next year's rookie class. If I'm not mistaken, they own the Hawks' first-round pick next
year.
Yes,
they do.
The Hawks are 1-3 right now. They don't look very good. I don't think they're going to get a whole lot better. This is going to be a pretty high-value pick next year that they own.
Yeah, definitely. So, I think if you're a NBA fan, you should really start rooting for the Hawks.
Yeah,
cause
yeah. I really don't want the Spurs to get
it
a high pick
next year. It might be a little catastrophic if the Spurs get a number top three.
It's really because that
would just be insane.
It's so unfair, honestly, for a team to draft lottery their way into David Robinson, Tim Duncan, Wembanyama,
Stephon Castle,
Dylan Harper,
and also just traded for De'Aaron Fox last season for a bag of chips.
Barely
for anything.
I think if I'm an NBA fan right now, I'm preparing myself for the Spurs era. I think they will be winning a ring sooner rather than later. I think it's a matter of time if they can keep this team together.
Definitely.
So yeah.
I mean, I think though, if you have that many like first round, top, high first round pick, high potential guys, the new CBA could definitely break up that team.
Yeah, when some of these guys need to get paid,
it might be.
Fear. Hopefully, by the time, you know, all of these guys are looking for their rookie deal extensions, the salary cap will have gone up a lot. But
yeah, if you take like a Spurs or a OKC level strategy, though, where you just keep bringing in low contract rookie scale contract guys, you could definitely extend that window.
Yeah.
And the Spurs did that with their Tim Duncan dynasty, where they just kept bringing in new guys. They brought in Kawhi. They drafted Kawhi, and they won that championship. So it could definitely be an interesting era in San Antonio.
Wembanyama's contract extension, when he gets one, is going to be colossal.
Definitely.
It'll be, I think, kind of like what we saw in the MLB with Shohei Ohtani relatively recently. Just, like an absurd amount of money. I mean, like, he's... If you think about players in this league that are untradeable, you look at Nikola Jokic, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and far beyond both of them, Victor Wembanyama.
I'd say Jalen Brunson also, just because of what he means to New York City.
I thought Luka Doncic was untradeable, and then he got traded. So if I'm gonna be honest, like Luka is better than Jalen Brunson. Like,
yeah, that's true. I don't know, cause Luka. I think we have to see how he does on a serious team now in his new skinny arc. But yeah, I mean, Luka is a very elite player. I am definitely a little biased as a not a big fan of Luka and a big fan of Jalen Brunson. Any other teams you've been watching this week, Gavin?
Yeah, I want to shout out, and this is going to be a crazy shout out, the Utah Jazz.
Okay.
They're 2-1 right now. Obviously had a statement win over the Clippers to open up the
bit of a sore subject. I'm happy I was not watching that game because that probably would have sent me into a deep, dark depression if I watched that game.
Yeah, but
instead of doing my homework,
Walker Kessler this season is averaging 16, almost 17 points. And 10 rebounds, or 9-7. So, essentially a double-double. And on top of that, he has 1.7 steals and 2.7 blocks a game. So, he's putting up defensive numbers. He's getting boards like a center should. He's putting up decent points on the board. So, he's been pretty good for them. And then, talk about random 50 bombs in the league this week.
Last night.
51 points against the Suns, 14 rebounds.
Against the Suns, but 50 still, points is crazy.
50 points. They've been pretty good. Speaking of the Jazz, someone who's been not as good for them, and talking about such a good rookie class this year, Ace Bailey is only averaging 3 points, 2.5 rebounds, and 1.5 assists.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising. You'd think he would get a lot of heat and playtime on this pretty weak Jazz roster, but
and that's a lot of the thinking I thought was he'd go to the Jazz and get like lots of playing time and just chuck up shots. But
also there was all of the drama of him not wanting to land there, and he showed up to training camp late. His agent was trying to get... Where was he trying to go? He was trying to go to a bigger market.
He was trying to go to Washington.
Yes.
He was trying to go to the Wizards.
But, I mean, I think that would be insane if he pulls, like, a LeBron or, like, James Harden-style move where he tanks on purpose to get traded. As a rookie, I don't think anyone would trade for you if you come in as a diva.
Yeah. Well, it's also not like he's not playing a lot of minutes, but he played 20 minutes, 13 minutes, and 14 minutes in his three games so far. That's enough time to get more than 8 points across all of those combined. And on October 24th against the Kings, he had 13 minutes and 0 points. He was 0-5 from the field. That's just... like, flat out not good.
That's bad.
Granted, he doesn't have, like, superstar caliber players around him on the Utah Jazz, but, you know, you gotta at least make a shot if you're getting almost 15 minutes, right? Yeah.
Fourth pick?
I feel like fifth. Fifth, yeah. And then, I mean, if you look, October 27th against the Suns, 14 minutes, he had 6 points, he was 2-9 from the field, both of which... were three-pointers, with one rebound and one assist. Against the Suns, you really would expect more from a guy who is your fifth overall
definitely
pick. And if this were low-key like any other year, you say, you know what, like, give him time to develop. The problem is this year we've seen so many guys who have just come in and been really stellar off the bat, like VJ Edgecombe, Dylan Harper, Cooper Flagg. The guy in Washington, Trey Johnson, I believe is his name. He's been good.
Yeah, I mean, it is super early on, so you got to give him some more time to get acclimated to NBA, but definitely disappointing start for him. One team that I watched the most this week, the Clippers, they did have a kind of humiliating opening loss to the Jazz, but... since then, they put up two solid wins against the Suns, who pretty hopeless franchise this year, but still a decent team, and the Portland Trailblazers, who have actually looked really solid. Kawhi, he looks I mean, incredible. His defense looks great. His offensive production looks very good. In the first game, he had a pretty mediocre game, but against the Blazers, he had like 13 points, or 30 points, sorry. He played good defense. James Harden, we were worried that he might have a big fall off year. He's getting up there in age, 36 years old, so he could definitely see, he could have seen a decline, but he looks like he could still be that elite point guard, facilitator, system guy. Their additions also look solid. Last episode, I gave a semi-hot take that Gavin was surprised by, that John Collins could win sixth man of the year. And John Collins, he's looked really solid for the Clippers coming off the bench. He might even become a starter. Last game, he had 16 points. He had 10 against the Suns and 14 against the Jazz. He looks like what the type of player the Clippers needed after the playoffs last year. Big, strong, power forward, give them a lot of rebounding, more size. We said this earlier in the episode, but the NBA looks to be moving towards playing bigger instead of smaller. Who else? Derrick Jones Jr. seems to be having another solid season. Still shooting solid from the three and playing elite defense. Another elite defender, Chris Dunn. I really love Chris Dunn. He's not the best offensive guy, but he brings tenacious defense. He's probably one of the best perimeter defenders in the league today. And last season, a big concern in the playoffs, at least, was his offense, namely his three-point shooting. But to be granted, it is pretty low sample size, only three games, but he's been shooting solidly from the three. He was 1 of 3 against the Blazers and 2 of 4 against the Suns. Solid. Zubats also looks to be having another elite season. Last season, he was top three in most improved player and heralded as a potential all-star guy. This season so far, he's put up really good stats still. Against the Blazers, 21 points, and against the Jazz, 19. He had 2 blocks against the Blazers also, and still a really good rim protector. All-defensive second-team guy last year, and still bringing up that caliber of defense. Their backup center that they got in free agency, Brook Lopez, also elite rim protector, three-point shooter, gives them a new look at the five, brings that three-point shooting in. Should be interesting to keep seeing. But yeah, the Clippers, they look good so far. Definitely interesting start to the season. A lot of other teams that are surprising, a lot of major disappointments. Like we said, the Hawks seem to be really disappointing, and the Jazz are coming out in surprising fashion with a solid start. That's all for this episode of NBA in the AM. We'll see you next week at 6 a.m.
Yep, thank you guys so much for listening. Again, very sorry for the late start and the technical difficulties, but I think we have that worked out now. So, yeah, thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week.
We'll see you.